And thank you, Savannah, for tuning in to Real Estate Real Talk with Julia M. Spencer. You're listening to WRUULP Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul. And hello, Savannah. Thank you again for sticking with me here through that first song while I get my stuff all set up here. And welcome to my show, Real Estate Real Talk. Thank you again for tuning in. It is the middle of the week, middle of the day. As of now, you have passed the midpoint of the week. So congratulations, you've made it. My name is Julia Spencer. I'll be your host here for the next hour on Real Estate Real Talk here on April 11th, 2018. And thank you so much for joining me. And in fact, it's actually 11 minutes past noon, so you passed the midpoint by 11 minutes here. Before I get started with my show here today, I just want to make sure that you know that the viewpoints expressed in the following program are not necessarily those of WRUU, its license holder, or its staff. I want to just make sure I always read that. I have a lot of opinions on my show here, and some people might disagree. And that is just perfectly fine. So what are we going to talk about today? So on today's show, I want to get a little bit more interactive. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to just introduce a little bit. And then I'm going to start my live Facebook feed here on my Facebook site, Julia M. Spencer. You can actually look me up there and see me in the flesh, in the studio. You can post questions to that video, actually. And you can also... that's probably the best way to reach me right now. You can also email me, and my email address is realestate@juliamspencer.com. I'll be sort of kind of monitoring everything, and hopefully I can get a good question in that I can answer. You can also text me, actually, and my number is 912-308-6802. Again, 912-308-6802. Now, in the meantime, though, I will be answering questions I received on my YouTube channel and from my emails in the past, so we'll have something to talk about. And let's see, where are we going to next here? I'm always trying to get my board and everything set up. So while I set up the video, the Facebook video, I'm going to let you listen to one more song, and I will be right back. And that was the song East Side featuring Soren Bryce by Jacob Plant. Prior to that, I actually played Movies by Yoshi Flower. Some of my favorite songs on my playlist right now. And my break songs. I always choose like my favorite songs and the break songs here. So let's get to some questions from some of my subscribers, because we don't want to just play music, although I'll love doing that. Let's get to some questions. I actually looked on my YouTube channel yesterday to see what I could find. And let's just go through them from the top to bottom here. I got a question from Alvin Almarante. And it goes like, "Hi, Julia. How are you? Thank you for your videos. Do you have an email where I can reach you at? Thank you." And yes, I already mentioned the email, realestate@juliamspencer.com. Don't forget the M in the middle between my first and last name. You can also email me if you're listening here locally in Savannah and ask me any questions that you like. I have access to a large pool of investors, friends, attorneys, loan officers, people I can ask questions. So if I don't have the answer immediately available for you, I can find you the answer. And let's get to the next question here. And you can also ask me questions right here on my Julia M. Spencer's Facebook live feed right now, which is on. Hello, everybody, if you're watching. I have somebody who's watching, one person right now. And the next question is by Michael Parker. And he writes, "Julia, you are a very smart and beautiful woman." Thank you. "I have been investing for 3 years now and have 4 rentals. I'm in upstate South Carolina. I would love some one-on-one coaching on tax sales if you ever make it up this way." So let's talk a little bit about South Carolina. I actually have previously touched a little bit on investing in South Carolina because I've done that just very recently. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about that and one-on-one coaching as well. Well, this person found me on YouTube, obviously. I have several hundred YouTube videos there on my YouTube channel. You can find it simply by just searching my name, Julia M. Spencer, and you can see any kind of topic there. Just search by the topic. And I actually have recently invested in Jasper County, South Carolina, which is just across the border here, northeast of us here in Savannah. And the process is very, very simple in South Carolina. It looks like somebody from Nashville, Tennessee has just tuned in. Hello, Jeff. And let's talk about South Carolina. So the process is very simple to invest in tax sales in South Carolina, the county that I went to. Now, whenever I tell you these things, make sure you check with the county officials where you invest, or I should rather say taxing authorities, because you can buy tax liens and deeds from counties as well as from cities. And so I bought some tax liens over the counter in South Carolina in Jasper County. It was very, very easy. I kind of was a little bit late for the sale, so I missed the sale. The sale was in November of last year. I ended up going there in December. And what I did is I just went to the county courthouse there in Jasper County in Ridgeland, South Carolina, and asked them for a list of whatever was left that wasn't sold at the sale, which is basically when it goes on this over-the-counter list, leftover list is what I call it sometimes. And so I got the lists and I researched the lots. There's a due diligence process that I use, a six-step process to research each property. Now, since I was local, I was also able to actually drive to each one of those properties and check them out. And I selected a few and went ahead and bought them and basically just got some funds from the bank. I had to get a cashier's check, of course, and asked the treasurer there how much was due, because whatever it was at the sale, they added some money to it, of course, for their fees and everything. And the way it works in South Carolina, in Jasper County, it's a one-year redemption period. And when you invest in a tax lien, you are on what they call a 3, 6, 9, and 12 system is what I call it. It's basically, if the person redeems the lien within the first 3 months, within the first 4 months, the first quarter, that you get 3%, second quarter, 6%, third quarter, 9%, and fourth quarter, 12%, which is your maximum interest that you can make in the year. And I purchased the liens in December. The sale was in November, and they were redeemed just last month in March. So essentially from November to March, because it starts whenever the actual sale happened, not when I bought them over the counter, the period that has passed was 4 months. So we are actually 5 months, close to 5 months. Anyways, they gave me 6%. We were in the second quarter, and so I got 6%. It was really super easy. There was no emotions involved in haggling or in any way trying to going through the redemption process with the actual owner. What happened is that I got a letter from the county saying that the owner has redeemed the property, and all I had to do is send them a receipt that they've given me when I bought this lien, and I would be sent a check. And all of this happened within 3 or 4 days. I had the check in hand with my interest that I earned in those couple months. So it was really, really super easy. Your state could be the same, but you have to, of course, check how that is done. Now, this particular subscriber, Michael Parker, is very likely that it's done exactly the same way in the county where you are. You say you are in upstate South Carolina, so I would just check with the county officials there. And a lot of people actually ask me this. They ask me how it's done wherever they are. They want like my read on how it's done. So it is not as much, it doesn't make you as much money in South Carolina as it does here in Georgia. Georgia, of course, is a penalty state where you get 20% from day one. And in South Carolina, they kind of split it up a little bit by quarter. And but it's much easier to get your money also. It's not there's not a lot of hassle. And here's where I'm going to caveat this. I actually had a property owner redeem a property from me last week. It was last week on Tuesday or Wednesday, I believe. And in this case, the original owner actually hired an attorney to meet with me and do the redemption process. In other words, they had to prepare the quitclaim deed, and they had to bring the cashier's check to redeem the property plus the penalty rate. And of course, since I bought the property, there was additional taxes due, which I also paid, which I've added to my bill, which was made the whole bill, of course, bigger, and the 20% penalty was added on the top amount, which this attorney really wasn't very happy about. I'm sure his client wasn't either, but that's how the law reads. So I didn't have to deal with any of that in South Carolina. Much easier process. So just something to be said that when you go to a state where you're investing in tax sale foreclosures, where you have to at the end of the sale pretty much deal with everything yourself, or the county kind of excludes themselves from doing anything else for you, it's much harder for you as an investor. You have to actually do some stuff after that. But in South Carolina, it's a very easy state to do this. So it might be a better place for you to start with if you're a beginner. So I also have actually bought another lien in South Carolina that has not yet redeemed. And I will update you all listeners, of course, how that goes once we get there. All right. So let's see what else we're going to talk about. Let's start this one. I might have to take a break though halfway through, because this one might actually take a little bit of time. We're almost at the half point here. In fact, you know what? Let me just play some announcements and I'll come right back.
Hi, I'm Ian McCarthy, host of In the Pocket Sunday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. here on WRUU. I want to invite you to our second annual Tunes and Brews fundraiser at Southbound Brewing Company, April 28th from 6 to 8 p.m. Join us for our biggest party of the year in support of Savannah's only community radio station, 107.5 FM. This year, we're excited to announce that a few familiar WRUU voices will be providing live music. Josephine Johnson of Sister Sound and Clay Hodges from Monday Motivation will share their tunes. Even yours truly will perform with the local band Nancy Druid. We'll also feature acts like Dead Neighbors of Athens, Georgia, Teen Divorce of Jacksonville, Florida, and DJ C. Powers from Savannah joining in on the action. We'll bring the tunes, Southbound will bring the brews. So join us Saturday, April 28th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Southbound Brewing on East Lathrop Avenue. More information can be found at WRUU.org. See you there. And thanks for helping keep community radio alive and well in Savannah.
WRUU brings you the most diverse and passionate local radio programming on the air in Savannah. This all-volunteer and nonprofit community radio station accepts no money from any form of government. Our diversity and independence is made possible only through the generous financial support of listeners like you. We rely on your annual and ongoing monthly contributions to cover the many costs associated with bringing you our broadcast and web programming. If you are a contributor, thank you. If you are not yet a contributor, please show your appreciation of the role WRUU plays in your life by becoming a contributor in any amount. You can donate quickly and easily by credit card or check. Just find the donate and subscribe links at WRUU.org. Thanks for listening to and supporting WRUU.
Yes, thank you so much for listening to and supporting WRUU. This is Julia. I am here for Real Estate Real Talk again Wednesday, middle of the day, middle of the week. Thanks for having tuned in. And we are talking about questions and answers, actually, that have been posed to me on my YouTube channel and in my emails. And the next question has to do with depreciation and capital gains. This is actually a very big topic here. So what I'm going to do is I'm probably going to break it up a little bit here, because it might be a little hard to follow. So once we start talking money and numbers, I lose a lot of people. So I'm going to try to make it really, really simple for everybody out there listening. So this specific question, I'm going to get to the question here in a minute, but it's somebody basically asked me, how does it affect your capital gains taxes? And the question was posed on a video on my YouTube channel that's called Understand Depreciation in Real Estate Investing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play part of that video so you can kind of understand where this inquiry came from. And then we're going to talk about the question some more. So here is the video.
With this little short video, I want to talk a little bit about depreciation. I had some questions from some of my subscribers to my YouTube channel, to my Facebook regarding depreciation. Some new investors that wanted to get into real estate investing and didn't quite understand the concept of depreciation and how it would affect their portfolio or their tax returns or even their cash flow. So I wanted to make this brief video to explain those two concepts. How does depreciation impact your tax return, and how does depreciation impact your cash flow? Let's talk about it. Depreciation is a deduction, but not a cash outflow expense. That is the big difference of depreciation versus any of the other expenses with real estate investing. Depreciation actually reduces taxable income, which is where it has the most benefit for you. And I wanted to demonstrate that with a really simple example. So let's talk about that. Let's say we have a $100,000 property, and the income that property generates is $10,000 per year, $10,000 per year. Let's assume that $100,000 property generates $1,000 every month in rent, and it's vacant for 2 months out of the year. And basically, your expenses for that particular property are $4,000 per year. That leaves you with a profit of $6,000 per year. Now, if there was no depreciation expense that you could take for this property, basically that $6,000 profit would be taxed at whatever your going tax rate is. For this particular example, I assumed it's 30%. And that would be $1,800. So take $1,800 off the $6,000. You're left with $4,200 or $4,200 profit at the end of the year. Now let's see what it looks like with depreciation. Same property, $100,000, same income, same expenses, same profit. Now we have this depreciation expense right here. $3,600 in depreciation. Let me tell you a little bit how I calculate that. In the United States IRS code, real estate property is depreciated over 27 and a half years. So you would take the $100,000 divided by 27.5 years, and this right here is a depreciation expense you can take every year on that one property. $3,636. Take that off your profit, your depreciation expense. Now, all of a sudden, on paper, your profit is $2,400 or $2,400. Now, let's tax that at the 30%. If we tax $2,400 of profit at 30%, you're left with having to pay $0.72K in taxes on that property. That translates to $720 versus $1,800 right here. What does that mean? Well, guess what? We're not taking that $700 off this profit that's right here on this paper. We're taking it off the actual profit, this actual profit of $6,000, which means in the end, your profit left with depreciation expense is much higher than it would be if there was no depreciation expense. In fact, it's about $1,000 more profit. Now that actually applies if you have positive cash flow on your property. So if you had, for example, 20 properties and they were all kind of like the same way, the same income, same expenses, same value of the property when you bought it and so on and so forth. each one of them per year would generate an extra $1,000 because of this depreciation expense. So at the end of 1 year, if you had 20 properties, this right here would translate into $20K of additional cash flow that you could realize because of depreciation. Now, let's assume that this is actually not the right amount of income and expenses. And let's say some of your properties have been vacant for a little bit longer than 2 months out of the year, or maybe your expenses are a little bit higher that year, or whatever reason. And basically, what you would have at the end of the year, instead of the 6K profit, you would actually have zero profit. And a lot of real estate investors do this. You actually think that might sound really bad, but a lot of real estate investors actually try to break even on their properties, meaning the money that they put in is actually the same amount that goes out in terms of expenses. So they kind of break even and don't show any positive cash flow. And you may wonder, why would a real estate investor actually get into that? Why would a real estate investor buy properties that don't generate cash flow? Let me tell you why. If this profit right here was zero, you still have the depreciation expense, which means that would make the profit on this kind of property, instead of something that would be taxed, it would actually be a negative $3,600 just on that one property per year and depreciation expense. Now, this is the kicker. Let's say you had 20 of those negative income properties. Now, you think, okay, I lost $3,600. That's money out of my pocket. Why would I want that? But depreciation is a non-cash flow expense. It's not cash that you actually given away. It's just an expense on paper. So let's say you had 20 properties and each one generated $3,600 a year in negative expenses. Multiply that $3,636 times 20, you suddenly have $72,720 of negative income on those properties, which you can use if you have another business, or if you, for example, have a job where you have to pay taxes. You can take $72,720 off of whatever that you have already as taxable income from your job, from your other business, or whatever, and basically make that other income that you have be zero. For example, I have a very good friend that typically pays anywhere between $20,000 and $70,000 a year in taxes. That's money he has to bring to the IRS at the end of each tax return because he generates so much income with his business. If he had 20 properties, and this would be the calculation on each one of them, he basically would have on a tax return where he owed $72,000, he would use this amount right here and offset those $72,000 in expenses in this tax bill, this huge tax bill, and basically zero it out because he has all this depreciation expense. And the best thing is, no money goes out of his pocket. It's just properties that he's holding. They're breaking even. They're not costing him anything extra. This is where real estate investing is huge. It's huge. It makes you money in a very subtle way, not by maybe sometimes not putting money right into your hand, but actually by reducing your taxable income. Reducing your taxable income, this is the key, because it's not always about how much money you make, but actually it is about how much of that money you get to keep.
And that was my video about depreciation. I don't know if you followed it all. If you haven't, if you got lost halfway through, just go to my YouTube channel, and the video is called Understand Depreciation in Real Estate Investing. My channel's name is Julia M. Spencer. So mind you, a lot of the comments and questions I got on that video were actually criticizing the fact that I omitted a couple of details. And for starters, somebody criticized me that I needed to deduct the land value first in the calculation, and also the fact that some investors cannot take depreciation expenses because they make too much money. Yes, there is a high up limit. If you're a millionaire, you can't take any depreciation expenses at all unless that's changed. And but you can take the accumulated depreciation when you sell the property. So and also there's the fact that some investors can't take all of the depreciation or some of it because it's capped for investments when they aren't actually actively participating in real estate, in the real estate business, the real estate that they own. And all these nuances I actually explain in the notes below the video, but I kind of omitted them all at the video because I really just wanted to get the calculation down, because a lot of people get lost in the calculation. Other people throw little details in and it just confuses the whole thing. And I'm trying to keep it simple. So anyways, the question that I had on this video, and by the way, we did have a question right here on the Facebook feed, which I'll get to next. But the question we had with this video right here was from a YouTube subscriber called Magic Cheeseball. I love y'all names, y'all's names here on YouTube. I love it. So, but basically the question is, when you do this, you will have to pay capital gains tax when you sell the property, yes or no? And all right, so this is how I analyze questions like this. When you do this, I'm not sure what he or she means by this, but depreciation is there. You don't do it or don't do it. It's just there. You can, of course, choose not to take a depreciation expense, but why would you not want to? That's money in your pocket. So anyways, but do you have to pay capital gains taxes when you take depreciation expenses? So, or how does that one affect the other? So my answer to that question is yes and no. It depends. So I kind of tried to figure out in my head how would it best explain capital gains taxes to the folks that are listening. And it's kind of like a hard topic to grasp sometimes in terms of calculation. So bear with me here. Put your thinking cap on for a moment. And just walk with me through this visualization exercise here with me on capital gains. So just picture yourself, or picture your property, your investment property, mind you, because this does not apply to your personal home. Depreciation expenses are only taken on investment properties, not your personal home. So just visualize a line and put your property in the middle of that line. That's where that property is on that line is like the zero point. This is where the property is in terms of price, how much you paid for that property when you bought it. So that's the middle of the line. Now, to the right of that line is going to be the positive numbers, and to the left are going to be the negative numbers. It's kind of like on graph paper, like you used to do maybe in math class. So to the right, the property's value is going to increase in value over time. So time passes, property hopefully is going to increase in value. Gladly here in Savannah, that's usually the case. So the value will go up for your property in the future. And at some point to the right of that line is when you will sell the property, or when you decide to sell it. So each year you hold the house, your actual tax value, or I think they call it actually the tax basis of that house, decreases though. And that's going to be the left of the line, because you take off depreciation each year of that house. The house is basically worth less and less each year in the eyes of the tax man. So that's going to be the left of your line. So just remember, where you bought the house is in the middle. To the right is how much it's worth on the market. To the left is how much it's worth in terms of tax numbers. And so for added difficulty, I'm going to have to throw that in here. You can throw in a little bit of capital improvement. What is capital improvement? So I don't want to just complicate everything, because we need to actually also talk about what the capital improvement is versus just the repair and maintenance expense. You know what? Let me just get to that. So capital improvement is when you add the cost of capital improvements to your tax basis in the house. So your tax basis is the amount you subtract from the sales price to determine the amount of your profit. So let me just translate that for the everyday person to understand. So imagine you have taken 10 years of depreciation on a home when you decide to sell it. So the tax basis has moved to the left of that imaginary line that I was just telling you about 10 times for those 10 years. So you've taken depreciation 10 times. So now you add capital improvements, like you add a deck or you'll add a pool or, I don't know, you start adding an addition to the house or something like that, something big. And now all of a sudden you're adding that to your tax basis. Instead of being 10 spots to the left, you're actually moving to the right a little bit. So visually, what you do is you basically taken away from the, or you adding to the tax basis of your property. And what you want to do is to close that gap between your tax basis and your eventual sales price as little as possible. That's the points to the right and to the left, as much as possible to keep your capital gains as little as possible. Now, you will pay capital gains on that gap, whatever your tax basis is versus your sales price. That's your profit, and that's what you're going to have to pay your capital gains taxes on. And capital gains taxes also depend on your tax level for that year that you're selling the property, so it depends on what your rate is. And so so that is basically how depreciation affects capital gains taxes and how capital improvements affect capital gains taxes as well. So I think what I should probably do is make a video to show this graphically, but maybe you were able to follow me here on the radio somewhat. I guess maybe I should probably summarize. So the question was, how does depreciation affect capital gains? In essence, the more depreciation expenses you have realized over the years, the more you will likely have to pay in capital gains taxes. But you also need to take into consideration the capital improvements, which neutralize your depreciation somewhat. And it also depends if you can and do sell the house at a higher price than what you bought it for. Obviously, if you've taken a loss on the house, if you're selling it for less than what you paid for it, you're not going to be in the hole as much as if you're selling it for more. So basically, if your house generates a loss, then you can take that actual cap. You can actually even get a capital loss as an expense on your tax return. So it just depends on what else is going on your tax return. I know this is kind of difficult, hard to follow. You can always ask me questions, realestate@juliamspencer.com. I've gone through this exercise so many times, it makes perfect sense to me. I know it's probably very confusing to a lot of people, though. So here's a little bit of a tidbit, though. I did mention that in the beginning of this segment here, that depreciation only applies to investors. If you're have your own personal property and you're thinking about depreciation expenses, forget it. Depreciation only applies to investment property. You do have to pay capital gains on your personal property sometimes. And what I'm saying there sometimes is capital gains, you are actually exempt from capital gains tax on your personal property based on the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997. So if you're single, you pay no capital gains tax on the first $250,000 you make when you sell your home. Again, that's that gap between your tax basis and your sales value. It's not how much you sell it for or how much profit you make in terms of actual cash in your hand. If you're a married couple, you can enjoy an up to $500,000 exemption as well. And also, you need to have lived in the home for at least 2 of the 5 years immediately preceding the sale. So that's another exemption there that you have to consider. So anyways, I think I beat this horse to death, hopefully. But depreciation is kind of a hard topic for some people to grasp, especially when you only own one or a few investment properties, don't really see how it affects your taxes every day. Gladly, you have me on your side, and I go through this exercise every single year, several times, and I am an expert, and I'm there to help you. So what I'm going to do next here on the show, I'm going to play a couple announcements and a song, and then we're going to get to our question here from our live YouTube feed. I got a question from Jeff Green from I think he was from Nashville or Tennessee. Let me see. Can't see that. Anyway, I'm going to read the question here after the announcement, and I'll be right back.
The Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah presents the Sounds and Spirits concert series. The next concert is called All About the Blues and will feature pianist Eric Jones, vocalist Lakin Williams, guitarist Bill Smith, and trumpeter Kirk Lee. This evening of blues will take place on Saturday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the church on Troop Square in Savannah. For more information, visit uusavannah.org.
Voting is now open for Connect Savannah's annual Best of Savannah Readers Poll, and WRUU is on the ballot. Help 107.5 FM join the ranks by voting for us in the Best Local Radio Station category. Voting ends Monday, April 17th at midnight sharp, and results will be revealed the night of Tuesday, May 22nd. For details and voting, visit ConnectSavannah.com. As always, thank you for listening to and supporting WRUU.
And this is Julia M. Spencer back again for the last 5 minutes of Real Estate Real Talk. And I wanted to address this last question. Unfortunately, my live feed has just stopped, but I will be posting this recording to my Facebook here. And I'm going to read you the question that I got while I was recording. It was from Jeff Green from Nashville, Tennessee. And he was asking me, let's see what he was saying. How many of your properties do you get to keep from the, I'm assuming he's talking about my tax sale foreclosure properties that I buy, and how many of these properties do I actually get to keep, and how many do I make into rentals, and how many do I buy every month? So that was a really good question, and I'm going to answer that right now. What I try to do with my real estate investment portfolio is I mostly try to keep a full pipeline. So as I've discussed with my fellow investor that was here a couple weeks ago, another investor, Mr. Ron Christopher, who's also a local investor here in town, in the first year or maybe even 2 years, depending on how long your redemption period is for a particular area where you invest, nothing really happens. You have to kind of fill the pipeline, basically. You got to stick some stuff in before anything comes out the other end. So what I try to do is I buy maybe 2 to 5 properties every month. And that could be like if I buy 5 in 1 month, I might not buy anything for the next 2 or 3 months. I just want to have like a constant pipeline of at least 2 every month going 2 to 3. And that way, in a year when the whole redemption period is up, I can usually assume that about 2/3 of them have redeemed by then. That's usually kind of like the number that I go to. And what happens is that at that time, you have constant inflow of cash. You're either going to get redemption cash or you're going to get property that you can then bar redemption rights or foreclose on, and then you can sell it on the market, or you can sell it to another investor, maybe an owner investor or somebody else. But you kind of have to fill the pipeline. So the first year or a couple of years, it's going to be a lot of cash outflow for real estate investing, for tax sale foreclosure investing, which is what I do primarily. And once you have your pipeline kind of filled, then it's kind of like sowing the seeds, and you have to wait for everything to grow a little. And then after a while, after everything's grown a little bit, then you can harvest, basically. That's kind of how that goes. And I guess the other part of that question was whether or not I rent any of these properties. Well, you know, honestly, I haven't. I usually, with tax sale foreclosure properties, hopefully the people that I bought it from can redeem it, the original owners. And the ones that I end up with, I try to wholesale. And a lot of times it's actually land, so there's no rental income for me. So I kind of need to sell it, do something with it. Otherwise, I'll be stuck with paying more taxes every year from that point onward. So what I try to do is I try to sell them as quickly as possible. A lot of times I sell them as is to other investors or people that have construction company or maybe an owner, handyman type person that wants to make it their own home or something. And because I'm not really into fixing and flipping, I've done that in the past. I've learned my lesson. I'm going to bring my partner in crime on the show here sometime soon, Joe. I've been talking about him. And it's very laborsome to do flipping projects and construction projects. It kind of requires all of your time. I don't want to spend too much time. I'm a little bit lazy in that. I can just keep the pipeline going. I don't have to do any flipping projects that will require a lot of my time, many months at a time, and a lot of investment money. So I try to sell most of them. That being said, I do keep one every once in a while. I have one right here in downtown Savannah that I rent. Periodically, I rent it to students here for the SCAD College or just people that need seasonal stay maybe for a couple of months or so at a time. And I also use it myself for my friends or, whenever I want to use it because it's a nice central location here. And but most of the ones that I buy, I sell them and I don't keep them around for very much longer. So unfortunately, though, oh my gosh, I am so sorry, people. We are actually at the end of my hour here and I am just blabbering and blabbering. I hope you had a great time with me here listening to my music and talking about real estate. Maybe I should make my show about 2 hours because 1 hour is just like not enough, quite enough. Anyways, just want to let you know that the viewpoints expressed in the preceding program were not necessarily those of WRUU, its license holder, or its staff. My name is Julia M. Spencer. You are listening to WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul. And the next show that's going to be on the station is Jazz Brunch, hosted by Dave Lake. Please send me comments, questions, suggestions, or if you want to make me to make another show about a topic, feel free to suggest that topic to me. Thank you, Savannah, for listening. And I hope you have an awesome, awesome, fabulous rest of your Wednesday and week. And I hope you can tune in again next week.